It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to the weekly download. Today we'll deal with the two C's, crime and comedy. We'll start off with the crime, with A Trip to Big Town and The Chill of Death from 1949.
Extra, extra, gang goes slain and wrecked, chill of death on Big Town, extra, Big Town, extra.
All right, now what, Croc? You shot Cora May and listen to that. Her father is out there in the dark with that hound, armed with a rat.
Shut up, Wilson. If he gets me, he'll get you and Kilburn.
Steve, the lights have been cut off.
Yes, Laura, my cottonmouth has cut the light wires. He could strike better in the dark.
Yes, listen to this Big Town five-star racket expose headline, The Chill of Death, brought to you by Lever Brothers Company, makers of Life Boy Health Soap. Another hard-hitting story of fighting editor Steve Wilson, whose newspaper creed stands for freedom and justice against the forces of intolerance and evil.
Freedom of the press is a flaming sword, that it may be a faithful servant to all the people. Use it justly, hold it high, guard it well.
Now to Big Town and tonight's strange story of retribution, the caught up with a killer in a luxurious hideout in the sunny Southland, but began in a suite of rooms in the old Grand Hotel, notorious hangout of Big Town gamblers and racketeers.
Look, Rocky, don't give me orders. Croc left me in charge of the numbers racket.
Yeah, but he told me to see you didn't try taking it over.
And he told me to see you didn't line up the bookie take for yourself like you're doing.
You're a liar.
Who's a liar, double-crossing slug?
You're a liar. Shut up and sit down. We'll settle this later. That's what you know, Joe, at the setups. Let the punk in, Cora May.
Sure, and you both better watch a step. All right, I'm coming. Don't be in such a doggone hurry.
No, sorry, lady, but I'm all alone on a desk tonight. Clerk, bellhop, switchboard, the works.
Set the setups and beat it, punk.
Okay. That'll be $2.
Put it on the Croc's bill.
Okay. When's Croc Miller coming back from down south?
When it gets warm. You can't stand a cold.
Yeah, so I hear. Ain't that why he's called Croc? Short for crocodile?
Yeah, Doc says he's thin-blooded. Chills easy. Now beat it.
Croc ain't got blood. If anybody ever opens up, they'll spill ice water.
Clam up, Nick. Come on, beat it, Joe. We got business.
Yeah, I'll bet you have.
Scram, punk.
Sure. Ring the desk if you want any more free service.
Why didn't you tip the punk?
Why didn't you? You think the boss around here?
I'll show you who's the boss.
Why don't you boys relax? Croc's the boss. Even while he's sunning himself down there on the South Coast. So just take it easy and relax.
Shut up, Cora May. You mind your own business, Rocky. Stick the Nick in the bookies and lay off my numbers racket.
Quit telling me things, Nick.
Quit phoning Croc. I'm muscling in. Crossing him up.
I ain't tip Croc or nothing, you rat.
You're a liar. Somebody.
Oh, somebody did. Yeah, I'll say somebody did.
So you just had to go and do it, didn't you, Rocky?
Yeah, so what?
Croc ain't gonna like it, Rocky.
He will when he hears Nick was crossing him up.
You better get to Croc and tell him first.
Yeah, go get the car, Cora May. We're heading south tonight.
Tonight? What about Nick there? Maybe he ain't dead yet.
We're taking him along in the car, dead or alive.
Anything on the hook for your wondrous girl reporter?
Hello, Lorelei. Come in.
Hi.
Are you a fugitive from one of Fletcher's city desk assignments?
I just finished one, thanks. A convention of travel agents and their talk of tours to sunny lands had given me the urge to get away to warmer climes.
Oh, sorry. We're all out of assignments to Florida, California, and Point South.
Well, couldn't you manage... your private line. Probably a tip from one of your tipsters that'll take us to the North Pole.
Oh, the waterfront, which would be just as cold tonight. Steve Wilson, Illustrated Press.
Hiya, Mr. Wilson. What do you know, Joe, at the old Grand?
What do you know, Joe?
Maybe plenty, Mr. Wilson. I think two of Croc Miller's head hoods shot it out.
Where, Joe?
Up in Croc's suite in this AC Ducey joint about an hour ago.
An hour ago? Have you notified the police?
Well, I didn't have no proof until after they left.
Who left?
Nick Collins, Rocky Kent, and a femme southern fry called Cora May.
Who was shot, Joe?
Rocky and Cora got Nick in a car.
They headed south? Are you sure Collins was shot?
Well, I heard a shot after I took him some setups. They were having something out, and after they left, I passkeyed myself in a crock suite, and there was plenty of plasma on the rug.
Well, that should be evidence enough, but are you sure they're heading south in a car?
Yeah. On account of I heard Rocky tell the gal they could make it to Crock's Beach House by tomorrow night. My driving went on stopping.
Thanks for the tip, Joe.
You gonna follow it up, Mr. Wilson?
Yes, Joe. We've been trying to link Crock Miller to several big town rackets, and this may be the time to do it. Thanks very much, Joe, till you're better paid.
But, Steve, Crock Miller is sunning himself in that fantastic hideaway of his almost 1,000 miles from here.
Yes, Laura, but you wanted to take a trip, didn't you?
South to the sun?
Yes, phone the airport and have them fuel the press plane for a takeoff early tomorrow morning.
Why not tonight?
I want to check a few big town angles on a shooting between two of Crock's gunmen. And we can still be there when they arrive at Crock's hideout tomorrow night.
Thus, Steve Wilson and Lorelei prepare to fly south to be in on a deadly gang showdown. And for the exciting developments, we'll rejoin them in a moment. Life Boy, get skin cleaner.
Life Boy, get skin cleaner.
And the cleaner you get your skin, the surer you are of being fresh and attractive. So remember, Life Boy, with its purifying ingredient, get skin cleaner, stops B.O. as no other leading soap can. Here's what the doctors proved in 820 scientific tests.
People took daily baths with different soaps. Doctors found that Life Boy does more than just remove the grime and perspiration you can see. Life Boy's purifying ingredient makes it more effective than any other leading soap against the invisible dirt that brings on B.O.
Life Boy's milder, too. Safe even for baby's tender skin.
And you'll like the way Life Boy, made with costly coconut oil, bursts into quick white lather, even in hard water.
Life Boy, get skin cleaner.
Life Boy, get skin cleaner. Keeps you fresh and attractive. Protects you as no other leading soap can. Bathe with Life Boy every day. Get the big new bath size. Buy Life Boy right away. Now, back to Big Town and tonight's Racket Exposé, which has Steve Wilson and Lorelei winging southward in a fast plane belonging to the Illustrated Press.
Say, Steve, there's the coastline.
Well, we made it before sundown.
Now if we can only spot Crock Miller's private landing field before dark.
Yes. We should be able to get to him before his big town stooges arrive by car.
This air map shows a field just back from the ocean beach and surrounded by a swamp.
Right. It should be just ahead. Keep your eyes open, Lorelei. It's only a small field.
Oh, I see something. Looks like a concrete strip parallel to the ocean and a big white house.
That's it. I'll drop down. Fasten your safety belt in case I've forgotten how to land this crate.
I hope not. The wind's right to go straight in.
That's Miller's place, all right. It was featured in a magazine in all its phony splendor.
Yes, their way of showing that crime and rackets don't pay.
Yes, neglecting to point out that the place is a flimsy stucco shell set in an isolated swamp for protection against Miller's enemies.
Oh, but that beautiful, sunny, white beach, Steve.
Yes, but Crock can't enjoy it without the shadow of an armed bodyguard near him.
Well, I hope we get a chance for just one swim in that warm blue water before we have to fly back.
You may, in the morning. But I doubt if we'll get out of here tonight, whether Crock's goon guns arrive by car or not. Oh, hold your lovely hat, my lovely. I'm going to set her down.
Oh. Well, that's perfect, Steve. Couldn't have done better myself.
Getting out of this small field may be something else.
Uh-oh. Steve, you better stop here. We have a reception committee of one waving us down with a rifle.
Yeah, so I see. You better stay on the plane.
Oh, listen to that surf roll in on the beach.
Well, that will have to wait, Lorelei. This character rolling toward us with that rifle doesn't act like a greeter from the local chamber of commerce.
Oh, looks to me like a snake.
Good evening.
Hey, you get out of here, mister. This here's a private airplane field. You take off again.
Sorry. I've landed here to see Croc Miller.
He don't see nobody what drops in like buzzards without an invite.
I think he'll see me.
Who are you, mister?
Steve Wilson, editor of the Big Town Illustrated Press.
Oh. Newspaper fella from up north, huh?
Yes.
Who's that there woman with you?
Well, the young lady is Lorelei Kilburn, one of my reporters. Now, where's Croc Miller?
He ain't seeing nobody now.
Why not?
He's favoring himself over there on the sand in the sun while it's still warm.
Well, nice work if you can get it. Let's go give him something to think about, Steve.
You hold on, ma'am. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
Don't throw guns around like that.
You give me that rifle back, mister. You get it away from me like that.
And I'll give you another lesson if you try it again.
You give me that gun back, mister.
Sure, without the bolts. Here.
You give me that bolt to this gun. This revolver says give it to me.
All right, here you are.
Hey, doggone you, mister. Let me go.
Pick up that revolver, Lorelei.
With pleasure.
Me.
You better search him, Steve. He's a walking arsenal.
Yeah. Well, yes, that's all. Now, where's Croc Miller?
Right here behind you, Wilson. Now, you better let go of Cotton Mouth like his namesake's he don't like to be manhandled.
Well, then send him back to the swamps with the rest of the moccasins.
I'll get you, mister. I'll get you if you don't get out of here before sundown.
Yes, your kind like to strike in the dark. Put him back in the pit, Croc. I want to talk to you.
What about? What brought you down here from Big Town in such a hurry?
Well, get rid of the so-called bodyguard and I'll explain.
Make him give me my guns back, Croc.
I'll get him for you. Go up to the house and tell Mandy to set out some drinks.
I'd rather set out some poison. You just wait, Wilson. You just wait.
You've made a bad enemy, Wilson. Better say what you come to say and take off in that plane while you can.
Sorry, Croc. You're due to have some other guests, and I want to be here when they arrive.
I ain't expecting nobody.
They're coming by car from Big Town, and I think they want it to be a surprise.
Who's coming by car?
Two of your boys and a girl called Cora May.
Cora May?
Yes.
Come up to the house.
What's the matter with you, Carl? What made you shiver like that?
The sun's gone. It's getting chilly.
That's right. I hear you can't stand the slightest cold.
Yeah. Come on. Come up to the house. I gotta get inside.
Yes, Croc. You'd better, because I think there's a chill wind of death coming down from the north.
Place this is now that the sun's gone down. Even the house is cold, damp, clammy.
Yes, it certainly is, Lorelei. It's because of the swamps all around the landside.
I wonder why Croc picked such a place if he can't stand the cold.
That he's safe from his rivals and enemies. The price any gangster pays for his brief hour in the sun. And I'm not being poetic.
Where's he now?
His heating plant has broken down. He's outside tinkering with it. That's why this house is so cold and damp.
Cottonmouth! Go shut that hound up or I'll shut it, you hear me?
I hear you, Mr. Croc. That hound don't like strangers. He's saying maybe somebody gonna die tonight.
Cut that kind of talk. Go phone town and get somebody out here to fix my heating plant.
They won't come tonight.
Well, phone them anyway and keep that hound quiet.
Looks like you'd have been better off in your suite in the old Grand Hotel in Big Town, Croc.
Yeah. What brought you flying down here in such a hurry, Wilson? You haven't got nothing on me.
No. You've been pretty clever in covering up your racket connections, Croc. But when your front men fall out over the division of your rackets, a lot of things can happen.
What's that, Wilson?
I told you Rocky, Nick, and a girl called Cora May are on their way down here in a car.
So what? My pals drop in every once in a while.
Not unannounced.
They'll be announced before they get within a mile of here.
How do you arrange that?
Cottonmouth's boy lives over by the main road. And nobody comes through the swamp road without his phoning in first.
You really trust your friends and guests, don't you, Croc?
But can you trust Cottonmouth and his son?
I don't have to trust anybody as long as I've got this rock.
Oh. So even here, in your so-called tropical paradise, your happy vacation hideaway, you have to carry a gun.
What do you do, Croc? Even sunbathe on the beach with that shoulder holster strapped on you?
Yeah. Now I want to know what brought you two news hounds flying way down here.
News hounds are also supposed to have a sixth sense, Croc. Perhaps it's the same thing that's making that hound out there howl at the moon.
What's that, wise guy?
The smell of death.
Cottonmouth, answer that phone.
I heard it. I'm getting it out in the hall.
That may be your guest, Croc. They've had time to get here from Big Town if they drove without stopping.
Shut up, Wilson. If it's Nick and Rocky, tell Judd to let him come on out.
What about the girl called Cora May?
How do you know so much about who's coming?
Well, we have birdies who tell us when the underworld apes of the Big Town jungle start fighting among themselves.
What happened up there? Well, come on, you two, Kim.
I think you'll get the whole story firsthand in a few minutes, Croc.
And we thought we'd like to be around to see how you handle it.
Get out of here. Go get in that crate and fly out of here, Wilson.
Sorry. That field is too small to take off in the dark. We'll have to wait till morning.
Oh, yeah? All right, Cottonmouth, what goes?
It's him. Cora May's with him.
Okay, so she's with him. What about her?
One of them's dead in the back of the car.
Dead? Which one?
One called Nick.
How'd it happen?
I don't know. I told you not to get my little old Cora May mixed up in no trouble.
Shut up and get out of here. Cora May can take care of herself.
None of these here newspaper hound dogs get away from here. Write up about this in their paper.
I'll take care of that. Now you go out and meet that car. Make sure Rocky don't come in here carrying a gun.
I'll make plenty sure of that. And as for you, Mr. Wilson...
Yes, Cottonmouth?
Don't you and your reporter gal get no notion of flying out of here. Because I done fixed your plane so you can't. You understand?
Well, looks like we're going to be in on this whether we like it or not, Steve.
What is Cora May to your bodyguard, Croc?
She's his daughter.
Oh. And you took her up to Big Town and got her mixed up in the racket.
And now... murder.
Shut up. She's no swamp angel. She's a smart, tough dame, and she can take care of herself.
Yes, but can you? Cottonmouth doesn't look much like a father, but he's acting like one. And he's liable to forget he's supposed to be your faithful bodyguard.
Shut up, Kilburn. Now listen, Wilson. You're after a story. I'll make a deal.
What is the deal, Croc?
If Rocky shot Nick, you can have him. Take him back to Big Town with you and get yourself a scoop.
Oh. The old double cross, Croc. The sellout to save your own rotten hide. No thanks. There's no room in the press plane for that killer.
Okay. Cottonmouth ain't forgot you took his guns away from him this afternoon. Maybe I can get him to take you hunting in the swamps today.
Hunting what?
Maybe what that hound dog is sniffing in the wind.
Hey, Croc, what's the idea of having a Cottonmouth character taking my heat away from me?
Shut the door, Rocky. Drafts give me a chill, you know that.
Okay, but I want to know what... who's the guy in Dane?
Never mind. Where's Cora May?
Out there with a swamp rat. But listen, Croc.
What happened to Nick?
That's what I drove down here to tell you.
All right. Tell me.
Nick was crossing you up, getting set to take over.
And you wasn't?
No, I was playing it straight down the line for you all the way.
You're a liar. I know different.
Who told you?
I told him, Rocky.
You told him, oh, you lying two-timing twist. You were playing along with Nick, getting set to cross up me and Croc.
What about that poor me.
Croc, honey, you know I wouldn't try anything like that on you. After all you done for me. Took me out of this here swamp to the big city. Give me a good job just watching them city crooks you got working for you.
Don't believe her, Croc. Don't trust her. She's as slippery as her old man and twice as mean.
Listen to him, Croc. He's mad because I wouldn't play with him to cross you up. Hey, who's that snappy gal, Croc? What's she doing here?
Not enjoying the surf and sunshine, Cora May. And you better start talking yourself out of this mess before you get in any deeper.
That's right, Laura. I'm afraid that when these three stop talking, there's liable to be shooting.
Who's the big wise guy, Croc?
A newspaper guy from Big Town. Wilson.
Wilson, a racket buster. What's he doing here?
We heard about your little shooting spree at the old Grand Hotel, heard you were driving south, and flew in ahead of you.
Croc, are you nuts letting a nosy in on this?
Forget about Wilson and the Kilburn dame. I got a notion they ain't gonna matter.
Not to you, Rocky.
Why not?
Because Croc has offered you as the fall guy to take back the Big Town for the murder of Nick.
Oh, yeah? Come here, Cora May.
Croc, make him let go. Let him have it.
Oh, break away from him. Get out of the way.
Can't lose.
Come on, honey child. We're going places.
Break away, Cora. Break away.
I can't. Can't. That's
it. Crack, you can have her.
Laura, I see what you can do for that girl.
Yeah, but you stay put, Wilson. Don't open that door again.
Now what, Croc? You shot Cora. Her father shot Rocky, and he's out there with a high-powered rifle.
Shut up, Wilson. If he gets me, he'll get you and Kilburn. He'll get all of us.
That bolted door won't keep him out. This is his jungle, Croc.
The lights have been cut off.
Yes. Cottonmouth has pulled the light switch or cut the wire. This is his element, Croc. He can strike better in the dark.
Wilson, I'll make a real deal. I got a rifle. I'll give it to you.
No, thanks, Rock. You made a deal that you can't shoot your way out of when you got in the rackets a long, long time ago.
As Steve and Lorelei are caught in the middle of a savage showdown, and for the ironic payoff, we'll rejoin them in a moment. Life Boy gets skin cleaner.
Life Boy gets skin cleaner.
And the cleaner you get your skin, the surer you are of being fresh and attractive. So remember, Life Boy, with its purifying ingredient, gets skin cleaner. Stops B.O. as no other leading soap can. Here's what the doctors proved in 820 scientific tests.
People took daily baths with different soaps. Doctors found that Lifebuoy does more than just remove the grime and perspiration you can see. Lifebuoy's purifying ingredient makes it more effective than any other leading soap against the invisible dirt that brings on B.O.
Lifebuoy's milder, too. Safe even for babies' tender skin.
And you'll like the way Lifebuoy, made with costly coconut oil, bursts into quick white lather, even in hard water.
Life Boy gets skin cleaner.
Life Boy gets skin cleaner. Keeps you fresh and attractive. Protects you as no other leading soap can. Bathe with Life Boy every day. Get the big new bath size. Buy Life Boy right away. Now back to tonight's headline story of Steve Wilson and Lorelei, who have flown 1,000 miles south to cover a gang showdown in tonight's big town story of the Chill of Death.
Wilson, don't pull out of here. Don't leave me alone in this forsaken dump with that crazy swampy waiting for me out there in the dark.
Sorry, Croc, you picked this place for a hideout. You hired Cottonmouth for a bodyguard. And you shot his daughter trying to kill Rocky.
Rocky pulled her in front of him when I shot at him.
That won't matter to Cottonmouth. He hates you like poison for getting Cora May mixed up in the murder of your other gun goon, Nick.
Steve.
Yes, Lorna. Miss Cora May.
I can't be sure in the dark, but I think she's dead.
That done it, Croc.
Now, Cottonmouth will hunt you down like the stupid, murderous animal you are.
He hates you too, Wilson. You took his guns away, made a fool of him. You can't do that to a swampy. He'll kill you and kill them too.
Not if I can help it. Where's your telephone?
There's an extension phone on a table behind you. By the window.
Thanks.
Well, what are you going to do?
Phone for the local law and...
It's
all right, Lorelei. He must be... Hello. Hello, operator.
Put down that phone, Wilson. You ain't calling the local cops out here to take me in.
Don't be a fool, Croc. If the police don't come, your pet bodyguard will kill you.
It doesn't matter, Lorelei. This phone is dead.
Dead?
Yes. Cottonmouth must have cut the line when he cut the light wires.
Wilson, I tell you, there's a loaded rifle over the fireplace. Take it. Help me get that crazy fool before he gets us.
No thanks. Your pal Cottonmouth seems to be able to see in the dark. We're staying right here in this room until daylight.
You'll get us. You'll get all of us.
Quote and unquote.
Keep down, Lorelei. Keep away from the window.
It's getting cold in here. That broken window, I can't stand the night air.
Keep away from that window or you'll never be warm again, Croc. Never bask in the sun of this fool's paradise again.
Wait, the back door to the hall. I didn't bolt it.
It's too late. Get on, Lorelei.
It's so dark. I can't see him, Steve.
Be quiet.
I've come for you, Mr. Croc. I've seen you shoot my daughter, Cora May. Where are you at? You miss me, you city hound dog? You're behind that there chair, are you?
Yes, you dope!
Shoot my young'un, will you? Now, where's my young'un? Where's my quarter mate? Quarter mate, you come home, you hear? You come home!
Steve.
Oh, awful. Steady, Lorelei. Wait till I light a candle. There's a couple on the fireplace mantel.
All right, but I don't think there's a thing we can do for any of them, Steve.
No. I'm afraid they've played out the old racket game of dog-eat-dog to the final bitter end. Friends, you know from reading your daily newspapers that what you've just heard has happened many times and will happen again and again so long as racket mobs are allowed to flourish. You can help prevent it by cooperating with your law enforcement agencies, local committees, and by refusing to pay tribute to rackets in any form.
What about next week's big town assignment, Dwight?
Next week, we're going to dramatize another headline story captioned The Deadly Gimmick. But right now, friends, remember, doctors have proved it. Life Boy, with its purifying ingredient, gets skin cleaner in your daily bath. Stops B.O. as no other leading soap can.
Say, Dwight.
Yes, Steve?
Dwight, I'd like to emphasize that purifying ingredient of Life Boys. The doctor's report shows what remarkable properties it has. It's the reason Life Boy does all these wonderful things.
Yes, and it makes Life Boy milder, too. The purifying ingredient. That's one more reason why Life Boy is used in the homes of 40 million Americans. Get Life Boy right away. Friends, if you'd like to see what the cast of Big Town and their real counterparts look like, see the exciting story in the April 12th issue of Look magazine, now on the newsstands. The current issue of Look is complete with pictures of Big Town's leading characters and their real-life doubles. In tonight's dramatization, all names, times, and places are fictional. Big Town features Edward Pauley as Steve Wilson, Fran Collin as Lorelei Kilburn, and is written and produced by Jerry McGill.
Lever Brothers Company has amazing news. New 1950 Rinso with sodium. It's here a year ahead of time. New 1950 Rinso has three times the whiter washing action of any other soap. The sensational new washing action of 1950 Rinso gets white clothes whiter than new, washable colors brighter than new, and keeps them whiter, brighter than any other soap. Rinso is so safe for clothes, so kind to hands. Get new 1950 Rinso at your dealers now.
Be sure and be with us again next Tuesday at the same time when Lever Brothers Company will again present Big Town. This is your narrator, Dwight Weiss, bidding you good night.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Now here's a treat for those of you who watch Pro on PBS. We have a radio episode from the U.S., and it's from 1945. It's called Murder is a Private Affair.
Time and the little gray cells. These will always catch the criminals.
Hercule Poirot, Detective Extraordinary. From the thrill-packed pages of Agatha Christie's unforgettable stories of corpses, clues, and crime, Mutual now brings you, complete with bowler hat and magnificent mustache, your favorite detective, Hercule Poirot, starring Harold Huber in Murder is a Private Affair.
Hercule Poirot to see Madame Baldwin.
This way, sir. Madame expects you. Mr. Hercule Poirot.
Ah, Mr. Poirot, come right in. My family has been panting with eagerness waiting for you.
Speak for yourself, Aunt Amelia.
You see, Mr. Poirot, you'll get to know the family without my introducing you. That was my stupid nephew, Henry Baldwin.
Really, Aunt Amelia? I think this procedure of yours is not only high-handed, but insulting.
You hear that, Mr. Pearl? She thinks I'm insulting her. That's my nephew Henry's wife, Alice. Henry's the only one of the Baldwins who married a plain girl like Alice. That's why we call him stupid. One reason, at any rate.
Excuse me, madame, but I do not see the place of Hercule Poirot in this, what appears to be a family squabble.
Your place is where I tell you. You get your check for this little matter.
Madame, when you sent for me, I thought you might be in difficulty. I see now that I was mistaken. Au revoir.
Just a minute, Mr. Poirot.
Madame, I have fortunately attained a place in my profession where it is not necessary for me to be insulted by impolite ladies, nor to watch this same lady inflict insults, deserved or not, upon her family.
Good for you, Mr. Poirot.
Thank you, mademoiselle.
Sorry if I was rude, Mr. Poirot. But it's partly force of habit and partly annoyance. Also, I take it as one of the privileges of the old. Will you forgive me?
But of course, madame.
I brought you here to solve a murder, quietly and with no fuss.
Madame, I suppose you realize that is a most amazing statement. Murder is never quiet.
Exactly. And I'm not going to have this fine old house of mine tramped on by a lot of heavy-footed policemen with photographers taking pictures all over the place.
Madame, it is difficult to follow you. Do you mean that there has already been a murder, or that you suspect there is going to be one?
Both. My maid was killed this morning, and I am going to be killed as soon as the murderer thinks it's safe.
Madame, this is a matter for the police.
Oh, fiddlesticks. There's no necessity for the police. The whole thing can be settled today.
How, madame?
Very simply. My maid was killed because someone of my family mistook her for me. I may be old, but I'm not a doddering imbecile. Not yet.
And what leads you to make this assumption, madame?
Mr. Poirot, I may not be a detective, but when an old lady in her 70s has a fortune of $6 million to be distributed upon her desk to the members of a greedy and impatient family...
Mother, I've stood all I'm going to. I don't know what the rest of the family's going to do, but I'm getting out of here.
Go right ahead, Lawrence, my son. But remember, the murderer of Marie is going to the electric chair.
Madame, I do not know what has been going on in this house. But once again, I strongly advise you to call the police.
Well, Lawrence, if you're going, please close the door gently behind you.
Mr. Poirot, are you going to take this case?
I can scarcely answer that, monsieur, because as yet I do not have the facts.
It's very simple. May I, Mother?
Certainly, as long as I'm here to see that you tell the truth.
Well, this morning, Mother went into the pantry to prepare the coffee and found her maid, Marie, stabbed to death. She immediately jumped to the insane conclusion that someone of us had done it.
Mr. Farrow, it's well known that I insist on preparing my own coffee every morning. All the members of my family know it. There was no one in the house except the servants and the people you see in this room. Well, today I overslept, something I haven't done in years. And when I went down to the pantry, I found Marie. She's very much like me, approximately the same age and build.
But, madame, I still do not see why you do not call the police.
It's very simple, Mr. Poirot. I know that someone in this room is a murderer, and I want you to find out which one it is. And then, when you've discovered the murderer, he or she will commit suicide, and we'll simply give a story to the papers as a double suicide. That will clear everything up, and... Where are you going?
To call the police, madame. Your suggestion is not only vicious, but also it is against the law.
Mr. Farrow, you are brought here on a confidential matter, and
murder, I... Murder, madame, is never confidential.
Jenkins, I told you we were not to be disturbed.
I know, madame, but this is about Marie.
Marie? What about her? She's dead.
Yes, I know, madame. But Marie, or rather her body, has disappeared. It's no longer lying in the pantry. Don't feed the animals, miss. Oh. It's against the rules.
Lawrence, look at that magnificent beast. Look at the way he walks up and down the cage.
Tigers do have power in their walk, don't they, Olivia?
They're beautiful.
This is vaguely reminiscent of you, darling. That same feline grace.
Why, Lawrence, you improve each time I see you.
You couldn't, Olivia. You were too overwhelming the first time I met you.
When I was engaged to Henry Baldwin, you mean? By the way, how is dear Henry and that stupid little wife of his?
Worried, Olivia. Very worried.
How did it go?
Are you sure it's all right to talk here?
In the Central Park Zoo, my dear. No one's around but the tigers and the children.
No, I don't know quite how to say. Oh, Mother blew up, of course.
I knew she would.
Oh.
Don't jump, Lawrence. He can't get at you.
Well, I'm nervous. Mother went right to work, assembled us all in the library, and accused one of us of trying to murder her.
Why, she frightened?
Well, that's hard to say, Olivia. You know, in many ways, Mother is like you. You're both strong women. Maybe that's why I love you so much.
Oh, never mind that, Lawrence. Go on about Amelia.
She called in Hercule Poirot.
Poirot? That's right, Tiger. I don't like it either. Poirot is about the only one smart enough to see through this.
Then you think we ought to drop it, huh?
No. No, we'll just have to watch our step, Lawrence.
I don't know, Poirot, but I swear that sometimes I think police headquarters is a much quieter place when you weren't in New York.
Oh, come now, mon cher Stevens. Surely you are not saying that the city of New York had no murders before Hercule Poirot arrived.
Sure we had, but they were simple gang killings. Some torpedo put the slug on another hood, and, well, there you had it.
There you have it indeed, mon ami, an entirely new language.
Well, I understand that better than Miss Baldwin, dame. She's sure a holy terror. Followed me around the house, bawling me out and calling me names. Poirot, where is that maid body?
Alas, mon brave, that is a question that I ask myself.
And who could have taken it? Now, you tell me that the whole family was sitting there in the library with you.
That is right, mon vieux.
And we checked on the servants. None of them could possibly have moved it.
Mon ami, there is something in this case that is out of focus. Observe, we are seeing it in a distorted light.
I'm not seeing it at all. We checked every inch of that pantry for bloodstains and not a one. Everything washed clean, which means that whoever took the corpse away also had time to clean up the pantry floor. Poirot, I'd give my eye teeth if you'd gotten a look at that body.
It is not the body that bothers me so much as the feeling I have. That unless we are careful, there will be another murder.
So you believe the old lady's story that someone's out after her?
I neither believe nor disbelieve it, Stephen. There is something that we have missed. Something that is in the back of my mind. Something that would open up this whole case for us.
Now, look, give me something to go on, will you, Poirot? Do you think that the old lady Baldwin is in danger, or don't you?
But of course she is in danger, mon ami. But from what source, I cannot yet tell. Sometimes I almost feel as if...
As if what?
As if she were in danger more from herself than from anyone else.
Mr. Hercule Poirot, madam.
Oh, have him come in, Jenkins.
This way, sir.
Bonjour, madame.
Good day to you, Mr. Farrell. I suppose you've come back here to do some more snooping?
Madame, for a woman who has just stated that she was sure an attempt was made on her life, you are singularly unafraid.
What good will it do me to be afraid? Certainly I should be if I felt that I had to depend on either you or the police. You've done nothing but track up the house and ask a lot of silly questions.
Then you are relying on yourself to stave off whatever threatens you, madame?
I've done it all my life, and I'm too old to change now.
May I ask what it is that you intend to do?
Yes. I'm going to change my will. Leave every cent to charity. That ought to stop the wolves from howling for my blood.
I ask myself, madame, I ask myself if they were howling before today.
What? What do you mean? Of course they were. Oh, excuse me. Hello?
Hello, Amelia.
Who is this?
Not a friend, Amelia, not a friend. Aren't you frightened?
Listen to this, Mr. Poirot. No, why should I be?
You were right, you know. Marie was killed by mistake. But perhaps that was all for the best. Now you know we mean what we say.
And who is we?
Shall we say your creditors?
You'll have to be more specific than that.
I'm afraid I can't, and I haven't much time. Amelia, you're lucky to be alive. You won't be unless you give us $50,000.
You won't get it.
We'll mail you instructions as to how we want it and when and where.
You're wasting your time, whoever you are.
I think not, Amelia, I think not. Marie died quickly and painlessly. But there's no reason why you shouldn't be longer about it and suffer. Think it over.
There. You still think that I'm fooling you, Mr. Poirot. You heard that?
No, madame. This telephone call gives one furiously to think, eh?
So maybe some good will come out of your thinking.
Madame, you are a strong-willed person. May I advise that you either leave the city for a short time or take police protection?
No nonsense. I don't scare easily. And I won't have the police tramping around this house. I thought you said you had an idea.
That is quite true, madame. But my idea simply tells me that there have been evil forces unchained in this house.
Well, I told you that.
Au revoir, madame. And please, if you will not heed my advice, make sure you bolt your door.
Henry.
Yes, dear? Say, this is exceptionally good coffee tonight.
Thank you, darling.
I married a good cook, didn't I, Ella?
Yes, Henry. You married a good cook. Henry.
Yes, dear?
Oh, nothing.
Come on, come on. There's something bothering you. I can see it with that little worry line between your eyes.
Henry, why did you marry me?
Oh. So we're back to that again, huh?
Yes, we're back to that again. I was Alice Lennox, a plain little girl, and you were Henry Baldwin, nephew of the great Amelia. Oh, it was all wrong.
You mean you don't love me, Alice?
Not love you? Henry, you know I'm so mad about you it hurts. Just that I can't understand why you married me.
Because I love you, darling.
And what about Olivia?
Oh, Alice, that's just part of my wild oats. Every man who's worth his salt is entitled to a few wild oats, darling.
I never should have married you, never. But, Henry, you don't know what it meant to me. You don't know what you meant to me. Here I was, perfectly resigned to living out the rest of my life as an old maid, and then someone beyond my wildest dream falls in love with me.
Darling, it happens sometimes. Let's see who that is, dear.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid to let anyone in. I'm so sure that every time I open that door, someone will be standing there who'll take you away from
me. Now, don't worry, darling.
Bonsoir, madame. Bonsoir, monsieur. May I intrude for a little while?
Oh, why, yes, come in.
Oh, but I see that I interfere with your dinner. That is unforgivable.
No, Mr. Poirot, we're just finishing. Have some coffee?
No, thank you. I will be brief, eh? That little scene this morning at the house of Madame Baldwin, that was most unfortunate, mister.
Well, we're quite used to Aunt Amelia's tantrums, Mr. Poirot.
You mean, monsieur, that your aunt is as insulting as that always?
Only since Henry married me, Mr. Poirot.
Madame Baldwin objected to your marriage, then?
Only enough to cut Henry out of her will altogether and have him fired from his job.
Ah, yes. Madame Baldwin is a stubborn woman.
Well, this was one time that she didn't get her way. I married Alice. And not Olivia.
Pardon? Olivia?
Olivia Wilson, the actress. You've heard of her?
Not until now, mademoiselle. Tell me, in the Baldwin family, there are you, Monsieur Henry, and Madame Baldwin's son, Monsieur Lawrence. And that young lady who sat in the library so quietly and said nothing, yes?
Oh, that's Jean. That's Lawrence's sister.
She's a very sweet girl, Mr. Poirot, but completely terrified by Aunt Amelia.
You needn't worry about Jean, darling. She's the smartest one of us all.
And what makes you say that, Monsieur Henry?
Well, a few years ago, Jean fell in love with a nice enough boy by the name of Harrison.
And of course, Aunt Amelia wouldn't hear of Jean marrying him.
Mm. You see, Aunt Amelia likes to choose the people that Baldwins marry.
So poor little Jean didn't marry Harrison.
But she is one of the Baldwins who has her cake and eats it, too. She still sneaks out and sees him on the side.
Oh, Henry, don't. You make it sound so mean and hateful.
Yes, there is so much in this case that is spiteful and evil, madame. So much that it worries me.
Tell me, Mr. Poirot, have you found Marie's body yet?
Not yet, monsieur.
Mr. Poirot, why did you really come here? Do you think we had anything to do with what happened?
I came, madame, to see if you had a telephone.
Poirot, will you please tell me why we're on this train heading for a little town like Boonville?
Because, mon ami, as I have already pointed out, Boonville is the home of Madame Baldwin's maid, Marie.
Now look, Poirot, there are some things I just won't believe. I've been a cop for over 15 years now, and I know that one of the toughest things to do is get rid of a body. Bodies just don't disappear into thin air.
Très bien, Stevens. You are on the right track. Continue.
I am? Well, the way I figure it is this. No one of the family could have stolen the body.
Precisely, mon ami. Now you are making good use of the little gray cells.
And no one of the servants could have taken it.
My congratulations, mon brave.
Yet here we are on a train, which means that somebody not only grabbed the body and washed the pantry floor, but they shipped the body off to Boonville.
No. It is he. You go wrong.
Oh.
Regard, Stephen. I once told you we had the wrong view of this case. Eh? We were looking at it from the wrong angle. The center of this is a selfish, dominating old woman ruling a family and being hated by this family.
What's that got to do with Marie's body?
In a way, everything. You have just said that no one could have taken the corpse, and you were right.
But
yet the body was taken away and the floor washed. There is therefore only one possible explanation.
Sure. The body got up and walked away.
Exactly, mon ami.
Hmm?
But first, Marie washed the pantry floor so we would think that the bloodstains which had never been there had been washed away.
What? What are you trying?
Well, good morning, Rose.
Good morning.
I've been waiting here for you for some time. I rather expected you'd be late after reading the morning papers.
What do you mean by that, Olivia?
So you really did it, darling. You know, I'm beginning to admire you more and more.
Now, stop it, Olivia. You know I had nothing to do with Mother's death.
Oh, Lord. You can break down and tell me the truth. After all, it's strange that it should happen just the way we planned it so many times. Stabbed in a bedroom, no one around.
Olivia, you're crazy. I tell you, I didn't do it.
Have it your own way, Lawrence, but he doesn't seem to believe you either.
Olivia, I won't have you talking this way.
Well, then, Lawrence, darling, tell me who did do it. And don't say it was a bird.
I don't know. I swear that's the truth, Olivia. I don't know who did it.
And what are the police doing about it?
Oh, they've been all over the house. Told the family that none of us could leave town. They even had Henry and Alice over and questioned them thoroughly.
Was Poirot with them?
Yes, but he didn't say much. Just went around shaking his head and peering into corners. But why are you so interested? You... Olivia.
What, darling?
Olivia, where were you last night? You broke a date with me.
So I did.
Olivia, where were you?
Oh, Lord, you're stupid to ask me. You won't like it when I tell you.
I want to know, where were you?
All right. I had dinner with your biggest rival for my affections, Stuart Charles. And a very interesting dinner, too.
I don't believe you.
It's easy enough to check. Just call Stuart, not... Lawrence, that man over there with the mustache. Quick, where is he?
Where? What? Why, that's it.
Poirot, of course.
Yes.
Oh, you fool, you stupid, blundering fool. You let him follow you here.
But, Olivia, I didn't know you can't blame
me. We're going to walk out of here together. When we get to Fifth Avenue, you can turn downtown. I'll turn uptown. After that, I don't care what happens to you. But I promise you one thing. Mr. Poirot won't be able to stay with me.
But, Olivia...
Come on.
Henry, darling, I'm sorry I'm late, but I had to get rid of a man.
As I remember it, Olivia, that was always your trouble.
Oh, but this is different. A different kind of a man. As a matter of fact, I got rid of him mainly because of you.
Well, now, that was very considerate of you, Olivia. But you seem to forget that I don't object any longer if you bring someone else along when you meet me.
I didn't bring him along, darling. He was following me. And his name was Poirot.
All right, Olivia, what do you want?
Information. Tell me how you killed Amelia.
If I had, I wouldn't be fool enough to tell you.
Henry, don't you ever get bored with that dull wife of yours?
That is an interesting question, Mademoiselle Olivia.
Oh.
But I feel that I can give the answer.
I was sure I'd shaken you off.
But of course, that was the impression I wanted you to have.
What's the big idea, Olivia? Is this something you're trying to spring on me?
Monsieur, I assure you that this is one time that Mademoiselle Olivia is completely innocent. She had no idea when she telephoned you that she was arranging an appointment for three. Tell me, monsieur, why did you meet Mademoiselle?
Why should I?
Because it is most important. Mademoiselle Olivia is involved in a plot. In this plot, she has two assistants. One of them I already know. The other I am seeking.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's the most absurd story I ever heard. A plot. Really, Mr. Poirot, your mind is much too melodramatic.
But of course, mademoiselle. We have had a murder and many threats. That is not melodrama, eh, mademoiselle?
A murder? Was that two?
Ah, no, only one. Marie is in perfect health.
She's what?
And now, will you tell me why you consented to meet mademoiselle?
Because of Alice, Mr. Poirot.
Oh, Henry, darling, that's funny. That's too funny.
Strangely enough, mademoiselle, that is the one reason that I will accept.
Well, thank you, Mr. Poirot. You know how Alice feels about our marriage. She's worried all the time because she thinks she isn't beautiful.
How right she is.
She has more charm and sweetness in her little finger than you have in your whole glamorous makeup, Olivia. Mr. Poirot, you can see for yourself that this girl is a troublemaker. She's always been that way. When she phoned me and told me that she had something interesting to tell me, I thought I'd better meet her and see what mischief she was cooking up now.
I see.
I wonder if you do, Mr. Poirot. I could hardly call your progress startling up to this point.
And you are right, mademoiselle. But there have been too many cooks in the mischief in this case. It is time that Hercule Poirot took over the cooking. And I assure you, I shall cook the goose of the murderer. Stephen. Take your feet from the desk and come with me.
Where are we going?
Mon
Why are you up to quarrel?
I have been making assignations.
What are you talking about? We have a murderer to catch.
Precisely, mon ami. A murderer who killed for hate and love. And therefore, I, Hercule Poirot, have been playing Cupid.
Excuse me, Poirot, if I say this is the first time I've ever seen Cupid with a mustache.
But of course, mon vieux. And I assure you that I am not particularly proud of the role. In this case, I am bringing together two people whom I dislike. But come, I have set events in motion which should catch the criminal.
All right, but I wish you'd tell me what you're going to do. There are too many suspects in this case, Poirot. Any one of the family could have done it. Not one of them has an alibi for last night.
And do not overlook Mademoiselle Olivia. She is a most dangerous woman.
Now, look, if you know who did it, let's arrest him and get it over with.
A miracle, a taxi.
Huh?
Taxi!
Where are we going?
298 Creston Drive, please.
That's where Henry Baldwin lives. See the guy who did it?
Mon ami, I do not think that Monsieur Baldwin is at home.
Poirot, will you please tell me what's going on?
Monsieur Stevens, I told you that I am not proud of what I have done, eh? But murder is a crime which calls for any action.
And what did you do?
I think, Stevens, I have sent out an invitation to murder.
Brings you here. I'm so surprised I'm forgetting my manners. Come in.
Stop acting, Olivia. You know very well you sent for me.
Darling, you out of your mind? I did nothing of the sort. I'd hardly send for you when I expect Lawrence in a very few minutes. And I don't think he'll be very pleased to find you here.
Well, then what's this, a gag?
It's a telephone message, obviously. It says that you're to come over here right away. Henry, I swear to you I didn't call you.
Olivia, if you're lying to me...
All right, twist my arm. But look at me. Henry, I didn't send that message.
All right. I believe you. But who did?
I don't know. Somebody is trying to involve us in something.
I'd better get out of here before Lawrence shows up.
It couldn't have been Lawrence.
I don't care who it was. I don't want
Henry, any... Do you think Poirot could have done it?
What? Why would he do a thing like that?
I don't know, unless he thinks that...
Thinks what?
That I killed Amelia.
Why would he send me a message to bring me here?
I don't know. But, Henry, I'm glad. Aren't you?
I'm getting out of here.
What are you afraid of, Henry?
I'm afraid of a lot of things.
Of course you are. You've always loved me, darling. You know, in your heart, you'd have married me in a minute if only Amelia had had the brains not to object to our marriage instead of trying to throw us together.
Well, that's not true.
Isn't it? Isn't it, Henry? Oh, darling, darling, darling.
Lawrence.
No, it's not Lawrence, Henry. Me, Alice.
I can explain, Alice.
You don't have to explain, Henry. Just what I always knew.
Alice!
Henry! Henry, make her put down that knife!
No, Olivia. I used this knife once before.
No, no, don't say it.
Yes, Henry. I killed Aunt Amelia. I always hated her. She was evil. And she hated me for marrying you. She tried every way she could to ruin our life. I never thought of killing her until that dreadful day when someone put the idea in my mind. With Marie.
I did that, Alice. We wanted to frighten Amelia into giving us some money. We never thought of murder.
Funny, isn't it? You should put the idea of murder into my head. I'm going to kill you, Olivia. You'll never have Henry. You're not going to live, Olivia.
Put the knife down, Madame Alice.
Yes, drop it.
So it's with you. With you all the time. With you who sent me the note telling me I'd find Henry here.
Yes, Madame. I had to make you drop your mask and come out in the open. Reveal yourself. As I said to Madame Amelia the other day, murder cannot be private. Be sure to listen next week when Agatha Christie, America's favorite mystery writer, brings you her favorite detective, Hercule Poirot, starring Harold Huber in The Bride Wore Fright. Music for Hercule Poirot is composed and conducted by Sylvan Levin. The program is directed by Carl Eastman. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
At this point in the podcast, I'd like to put in a plug for the Radio Theater Channel, the place on the internet where you can hear old-time radio all day, all night, 7 days a week. Be sure to check it out. www.oldtimeradiolisten.com. Next up, The Magnificent Montague. To Shave or Not to Shave. This one's from 1950.
The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribed, The Magnificent Montague, starring Monty Woolley. This is a day of decision for the Magnificent Montague. This bulwark of the Shakespearean stage, after 8 years of unemployment, has succumbed to his mortal enemy, radio. He is Uncle Goodheart, hero of an afternoon program. But now suddenly he is confronted with an opportunity for a triumphant return to the stage in Romeo and Juliet with Catherine Cornell, to play Romeo, the one role he's never done. Ah, but here's the rub. To play Romeo, he would have to shed his crowning adornment, his beard. If he doesn't, it means back to Uncle Goodheart. Every hour on the hour, he's changed his mind. All night, he has paced the floor, trying to reach a momentous decision.
To shave or not to shave, that is the question.
His decision? We'll have to wait until he gets up. Shh. It is morning in the Montague apartment. His wife, Lily Boehm, and Agnes the maid anxiously await his arrival at the breakfast table, knowing this is the day of decision.
Coming. Take it easy, Mr. Amici. The residence of Edwin Montague and Miss Lily Boehm. Oh, hello, Max. No, the beard ain't off yet. Thanks. When he went to bed last night, it was still on.
Is that Max?
Yeah, here.
Max? Lily? No, it's still on. Oh, first rehearsal tonight, he knows. Max, you've produced enough plays with Edwin to know this isn't a once-over likely proposition. I know he told you he'd take it off, and he's probably shaving it off right now. Yes, I'll let you know. Agnes, do you think he did?
Shh, I'm at his door. I'm trying to listen.
You hear any scraping?
Not even a snip. Maybe he's pulling them out hair by hair.
Agnes, Agnes, I'm shaking like a leaf.
Keep your shirt on, honey.
But, Agnes, do you realize that in a few moments that door will open? And after all these years, we may see Montague without his beard?
I need a drink.
Wait, I hear him. Agnes, did that sound like he still had the beard?
I don't think so. I didn't hear that familiar rustle.
Oh, Agnes, the suspense is killing
me. Take it easy.
Shaking like a leaf.
Hang on, baby. I hear him coming.
I can't look.
It's 0 hour. This is it.
Good morning.
Open your eyes, honey. It's still on.
I haven't made a study of it, but there must be a more soothing way of greeting a man in the morning.
I'm sorry, Edwin. The shock.
The shock? All I did was open my door. What is this, inner sanctum?
Edwin, it's still on.
Yeah, your chin is still only a rumor.
lovely Agnes. I will always treasure that sweet expression on your face. Like you'd just been fouled by Rocky Graziano.
Edwin, you promised Max Garland you'd shave it off.
It. It is a beard. Stop referring to it as something scribbled on a wall.
You're sweet.
Down, Agnes, down, before I throw a stick out the window and ask you to retrieve it.
Edwin, your first rehearsal is tonight. You'll have to take it off.
It is staying on. It is not coming off.
Edwin, I thought it was settled. You can't play Romeo with a beard.
No? Lily, I spent half the night poring over every reference to Romeo and Juliet. And at no point does Shakespeare say that Romeo does not have a beard.
Keep looking. You'll find Juliet wears a Van Dyke.
Where does she pick up those scintillating remarks? The pool room doesn't open till noon.
Edwin, stop being ridiculous. You know Captain Cornell will not be Juliet to a bearded Romeo.
Oh, she won't, eh? She will after I get through talking to her.
Oh, now, Edwin, don't do anything rash.
Rash? Because Catherine Cornell says, off with it. Little Kit Cornell, who was a walk-on while I was starring in Macbeth. Give me that phone.
Edwin.
It's time we definitely settle just who says what in this production. Hello, Kit. Edwin. Yes, I'm quite thrilled about it, too. It's going to be grand. Oh, thank you, Kit, but... why won't I be great playing opposite you? Oh, yes. Oh, I've always admired you, too.
Kitschy, kitschy, cool.
Excuse me, Kit. Lily, would you put something in Agnes's mouth? I believe the sofa will just fit. Kit. Oh, yes, Edwin again. Kit, dear, Max mentioned something you said about not wanting Romeo to have a beard. Huh? Oh, yes, of course, I understand. But I just hadn't looked at it from your side. Of course, I see your point. I just hadn't thought of that. Oh, it's perfectly clear. Goodbye, Kit.
Well, Edwin...
I didn't realize there was so much kissing in the play.
You'd better run right down to the barber.
Yeah, thank you, Lily.
Don't worry, it'll come out all right.
I hope so.
Good luck, Mr. Montague.
Thank you, Agnes.
Goodbye, Edwin.
Goodbye, Lily.
I know, honey.
It's the end of an era. Edwin!
Lily, I can't do it. I can't do it.
He went chicken.
Lily, I won't do it. Don't look at me that way.
This means no Romeo and Juliet.
I don't care.
Oh, that's just fine. After I convinced Max you'd play the part.
Lily, anything but that. Ask me to cut my throat from ear to ear.
No, Edwin.
Do you mind if I ask him to?
All right, Edwin. Have it your way. You just stay Uncle Goodheart on your little radio program.
It's not a little program. I have 10 million listeners.
Edwin, you disgust me.
Me too.
Quiet! At least for Uncle Goodheart, they don't ask me to disfigure myself.
I'll get the door.
I'll call Max and tell him to look for another Romeo.
It's a Mr. Zinser, your radio director.
Ah, Zinser, come in.
Hello, Mr. Montague. I just thought I'd drop off the script for tomorrow's Uncle Goodheart program. Here it is. Well, I'll be going.
Don't rush off, Zinser.
Well, I...
Sit down for a while. Ah, Zinser, today I need a friend.
But, Mr. Montague, I thought...
Oh, now, Zinser, I know we had words at rehearsal yesterday.
You struck me.
Think nothing of it. Zinser, I must get closer to you people in radio. You're all I have left.
Gee, Mr. Montague.
Well, Zinser, how does the script look?
Oh, it's a peacherino.
Good, eh? Tell me about it.
Well, in yesterday's episode where you fixed that little canary's wing, it went so well that we're following it with a dog.
Yes?
Yeah. This Airedale...
Airedale?
Yeah.
Go on.
This Airedale comes limping up to your little cottage on the sunny side of the lane with a sliver in his paw.
Yes.
You take the sliver out, and in gratitude, this old Airedale starts licking your feet and your face.
Yes.
No sound effects for this scene, Mr. Montague. We're pulling no punches. We're having an actual Airedale work with you. Mr. Montague, did you want something?
No, Mr. Zinser, I'm just reaching for this poker.
Oh.
I'm about to bring it down in your paper-thin eggshell head, hoping by some stroke of luck it'll come in contact with your peanut brain.
Mr. Montague...
Get out and take that script with you.
Don't strike me.
And I was going to give up Romeo and Juliet for that. Get out.
Edwin, what happened?
The beard comes off. I'm going to do Romeo.
Edwin!
Viva la Montague!
I must have been mad. It took an Airedale licking at my feet to bring me to my senses. Off with the beard.
Oh, Edwin, you'll never regret it.
I'll be Uncle Goodheart in the afternoon, but at night I shall cleanse my soul as Romeo.
Here's your coat, Edwin. Hurry to the barber.
I'll go to Angelo, my barber at the Presidium Club. He shall have the honor.
It'll make you look 20 years younger.
It will. Lily, the most wonderful thing just struck me.
A what?
Lily, for the first time in 30 years, I'll be able to walk on the street at Christmas without those little brats pulling at my coat, yelling, "Santa, bring me a sled."
We'll be back with The Magnificent Montague in just a moment. There's Mystery on Saturday evening on NBC. Tomorrow, Herbert Marshall stars as the man called X, a man without a name who travels the world over protecting his country's interests. He's the man called X. Tomorrow, over most of these NBC stations. For top Sunday listening, it's another broadcast of The Big Show. Tallulah will be your hostess again, presiding over an hour and a half of the very best in comedy, music, and drama with a collection of the greatest stars of stage, screen, and radio. Yes, the chimes are your invitation this Sunday and every Sunday to The Big Show. And now back to the Magnificent Montague. His decision has been made. His beard will come off. He enters the barbershop of the Proscenium Club. Angelo is waiting.
Ah, Mr. Montague.
Hello, Angelo.
I'm all ready for you. Sit right down here.
Thank you, Angelo.
The usual trim, Mr. Montague.
Angelo, take it all off.
You're so funny today. You make jokes. I'll just trim a little bit of...
Angelo, I said take it all off. Remove it.
Everybody says Mr. Montague is a great act of tragedy, but today you are a comedian. The usual trim, eh?
Angelo, you don't seem to grasp this honor I'm bestowing on you. You and your shears have been selected to cut off the Montague beard.
Maybe. Mr. Montague, did the beard to come off? You are serious?
I assure you that I am not doing it for a laugh. Off with it. Hurry up.
No. 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 I won't do it.
Angelo, stop this nonsense and do as you're told.
Mr. Montague, don't ask me. Please.
Take it off.
Mr. Montague, when I took my father's place here when he retired, he said to me, my father said, Angelo, when a sculptor retires, he leaves standing beautiful statues. A composer leaves beautiful music. It should live on after him. I, Angelo, he said, I'm just a poor barber. But I leave just one work of beauty to be remembered by. Signor Montague's beard.
That's very touching. And now that we're through with the sentimental slush for the day, take off the beard.
It is not a beard. It is my family shrine.
Angelo, your scissors.
No. No, Mr. Montague. I grew up with your beard. I trimmed it. I cared for it like it was my own little garden.
Angelo, enough of your yap-yapping. Start snip-snipping.
Mr. Montague, don't ask me to. I remember I used to sit way up in the balcony and watch you make those wonderful speeches. Julius Caesar, Hamlet. And as the beard bobbed up and down, I felt I was on that stage. And when the curtain came down, I, Angelo Cherubi, also took a bow.
Yeah, it is most fortunate for you that I never caught you at it. Now, Angelo, it's a little early in the day for melodrama. I'm telling you to cut off my beard.
No, it is not your beard. It does not belong to you.
It doesn't?
No, it belongs to my father. It belongs to the people. The people in whose memory the great Montague shall always live. It is not for you to say, cut it off. It is not your beard.
Must I carry around a bill of sale? Angelo, will you...
No!
You had your chance. I will go to Harry's Broadway barbershop where sentimentality and shaving do not...
Next.
Hello, Harry.
Hello, Mr. Montague. Sit right down. You're next.
Thanks, Harry.
The usual trim, huh?
Not this time, Harry. I want the whole thing shaved off.
Hey, that's a good one. You know, you're getting to be like those comics with the bald heads who come in here and say, part it in the middle. The usual trim.
Harry, please. I don't want any trouble. Just take it all off.
The beard?
Yes.
You serious?
Yes, I want it off. Get going. Well, Harry?
I'm sorry, Mr. Montague. I can't do it.
What's going on here? What must I do in order to get a shave? Bring a note from my mother?
Mr. Montague, believe me, if I could see my way to do it.
Harry, what can my beard mean to you? You've never seen me in Shakespeare. It means nothing to you. Cut it off.
Sorry. Mr. Montague, if I cut your beard off, I'm out of business in 2 weeks.
Out of business?
Look at it from my side. My biggest customers are guys with beards. Jose Ferrer, the actor. Rex Stout, the writer. Al Hirschfeld, the artist. Why do they come to me for trims? They trust me.
So how...
Listen. So I cut off your beard. Right away, it's all over Broadway. Harry the Barber cut off Montague's beard. So the next time I see my customers with affidavits on bended knee, can I convince them it wasn't an accident?
I will make a public statement, notarized, that I asked you to do it.
It ain't enough. Will my customers with the beards ever come in again and say, just the trim, Harry, and then lay back and close their eyes and go to sleep? No. They'll keep one eye open. They don't trust me no more. In their minds, it'll always be, he did it to Montague, he'll do it to me.
Harry, for heaven's sake, there must be a barber on Broadway who isn't psychopathic about my beard. There must be.
Let me know how you come out. Next.
Hello, Walter.
What do you want?
Come now, Walter. It's been a long time since I've been in your barbershop. About 10 years.
11 years next month.
Well, Walter, I'm in a hurry. Just take the beard off.
Oh, no, you don't.
Now, look, Walter.
So you want me to take the whole beard off, eh?
Walter.
11 years ago you were in here. See, I still got the scar on my forehead. That was just for trimming off a little too much.
Oh, Walter, let bygones be bygones.
Not me. I'm not the kind of individual who likes to live dangerously. Not a chance. Hey.
I remember when barbers used to drool when I went by. I'll find a barber who doesn't know me if I have to comb the city. Hold it. Stop here, driver. There's a barber shop.
Look, Mr. Montague, this is a pretty crummy neighborhood.
Good. Wait for me, driver. If either of you two barbers will be so kind...
Be with you in a second, chum. I knock with five.
I got three on the cut.
Brother, I'm on a schneid.
Gentlemen.
I'm coming, Buster.
Wait, look at the time.
Oh, be with you in a second, bud. Turn it on.
The results of the sixth race at Pimlico, off at 4:06. The winner, Little Caprice, 8:60 to win, 6 even a place, 2:40 to show.
I wished I was dead.
Gentlemen, now that your cultural period is over, will you take care of me?
Okay, mister, have a chair.
Thank you.
What'll it be?
Do you mind if I ask you a few questions first?
Questions?
We're just making sure. First, do you know anything about William Shakespeare?
Don't hang around here.
Fine. And now, have you ever seen me before?
You?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does the name Edwin Montague mean anything to you?
Yeah.
Good, good. And when I leave, I'll be just another face to you. You'll never remember me.
No, I guess not.
Splendid. Tell me, have you cut off beards before?
Beards? Sure, hundreds of.
Excellent. In other words, you'll cut off my beard and not ask any questions. You'll just forget about it.
Yeah, I guess so.
My good man. Cut off my beard.
Excuse me, I gotta ask my partner something.
Hurry up, I have a cab waiting.
Mike.
What's up, Louie?
I don't like this. I don't like the whole thing.
What?
This guy walks in, starts with the questions... He don't want me to know him. I should cut off his beard. He don't want me to remember him. He got a cab waiting outside.
You think he's hot?
Like a pastrami.
Don't touch that beard.
You telling me a guy on the lam wants to change his looks? Not me.
Look what they get that plastic surgeon who changed Dillinger's face.
I told you I was in a hurry.
What'll I do?
Keep talking to him. I'll go in the back and phone for the cops.
Okay, coming, mister.
I'll shave it off.
Yeah, sure. Off it goes. Gotta strop my razor. Nice day, if it don't rain.
Oh, no. A tonsorial Milton Berle.
Say, that was something, huh? Branch Rickey leaving the Dodgers?
Who leaving what?
Yeah.
Look, hurry it up.
Sure. Hey, you know who once come in here for a shave?
Who?
Strangler Lewis.
No.
Yeah, honest. Strangler Lewis. I was as close to him as I am to you.
What a golden opportunity he missed. Do you stop sharpening the razor and start?
This the guy?
Yeah, officer.
He's the one.
Are you dead-end characters referring to me?
Okay, Whiskers, on your feet.
Let me warn you, you flat-footed boob. If you lay one clammy hand on me, you will be the center of a police investigation that will make the last one look like a quilting bee.
Look, mister, I'm just trying to do my duty.
Is there so little crime in this city that your duty is now restricted to peeping under hot towels in barbershops?
Please, mister, I got a complaint on a suspicious character. If you'll just tell me who you are, that's all I want.
You didn't recognize me?
No, sir. Who are you?
Dave the Dip, wanted in Frisco for the Flugelman snatch.
If you just give me your right name, that's all.
I'm Edwin Montague, alias the Magnificent Montague.
Wait a minute. Your voice, I recognize it.
You're Uncle Goodhart.
Gosh, wait till I tell the missus. Uncle Goodhart.
Now may I go about the business of being shaved?
But, officer...
Shut up. If I hear any more complaints that you guys have been operating a horse room and back, I'll throw the book at you. Bye, Uncle.
And now, gentlemen, shall we commence with the disposal of my beard?
Look, mister, just go away.
Now, look here.
We're closed for alterations.
Alterations?
Hurry up, Mike. We got to get the horse board and the phones out of the back room.
Louie, we come back too soon. I told you the heat was still on.
Where are you going? Come back here.
Shave yourself.
Shave myself. It's the only way. Where's the drugstore?
Yes, sir. And what can I do for you, sir?
I wish to buy a razor.
Yes, sir. Would you like the shake injector? Push-pull, click-click. The Gillette, look sharp, be sharp. Jim, Pasana, Shave Master. We have a combination deal, razor and aqua velvet lotion. Join the aftershave club, you know.
My dear young man, gaze upon me. Do I look like a man who could be a prominent member of the aftershave club?
Sir, you look like a modern man. How about...
Now listen, you. I just want a razor. No push-click. I don't want to look sharp. Just shave.
Yes, sir. I'll get one.
Every American man has to go through what I'm going through just to get shaved. I predict the triumphant return of the beard.
That must be him.
Agnes, I wonder how he looks.
Steady, honey.
I can't look.
I'm shaking myself. Well, here goes. The muff is still there and it's mellow.
What is this? You sound like the Duncan sisters making a comeback in Dracula.
Edwin, it's still on.
Yes, but you are gazing at its last moments. I am taking it off myself.
But Edwin, do you still remember how to shave?
But I have a book of instructions. I am fully equipped. I have my own push-pull, clack-clack. I am the proud owner of the special gift offer handy dispenser with the sharpest edges ever honed. I'm tingling in anticipation of that aqua velvet aftershave glow. And I'm undecided whether to be a handsome knave with Burma shave or on the beam with palm olive cream.
He's loaded.
Edwin, why don't you just run down to a barber?
Barbers? You're speaking of a contemptible tribe of yellow-livered cowards who should be impaled on a spit and broiled under their own sun lamps.
Edwin, you've had no experience with razors.
Nonsense. This operation should be performed by my own two hands.
Dr. Montague wanted it in surgery.
Really, Lily, wouldn't it be patriotic if we released Agnes for active duty?
Edwin, your Romeo and Juliet rehearsal. You'd better take it off.
Well, it's off to the washbowl. And when I come through this door again, it'll be without my beard. Lily, you will behold a new, young, dashing Montague.
Agnes, Montague without his beard. What'll he look like? Can you visualize it?
I don't know. All I can see is the end of a plucked chicken.
Oh, Agnes, this is torture. Oh, last night I couldn't sleep because of this one horrible thought.
What is it, honey?
Agnes, do you think Edwin has a chin?
He must have something to rest that nasty tongue of his on.
Agnes, please, it's off by now. Oh, the telephone. Who could that be?
Probably the first bid from a mattress company.
Hello? Max? Yes, Max. It's off. What? What? Romeo and Juliet's been called off.
I don't know about you, but I'm grabbing the first freight out of town.
Agnes, we must stop him.
Success! Success!
Success, it's too late. Here he comes.
Success!
Success?
Yes, I finally got the top off the shaving cream.
Oh. Hallelujah, it's still on.
Oh, Edwin, you're still you.
Lily, stop talking like a song title.
Edwin, you don't have to do it. Romeo and Juliet has been called off.
Called off? Called off.
Max couldn't get a theater.
That incompetent excuse of a theatrical peruser.
Oh, Edwin, Edwin.
But Lily, it would have made me so much younger.
No, Edwin, it's better this way. I still have you and it.
I still have it. Yes, Lily, it's better this way. The immortal Shakespeare said all there was to say on the subject.
Shakespeare?
Act 2, Scene 1, in Much Ado About Nothing. He that hath a beard is more than a youth, and he that hath no beard is less than a man.
Join us again next Friday, same time, same station, for another transcribed adventure in the life of the magnificent Montague, starring Monty Woolley. Created and directed by Nat Hiken and written by Nat Hiken and Billy Friedberg. Lily Boehm was played by Ann Seymour. Agnes was played by Pert Kelton. Also included in tonight's cast were Johnny Gibson, Jackson Beck, Danny Ocko, Bob Sweeney, and Santos Ortega. This is Don Pardo speaking. Now join the fun at Duffy's Tavern on NBC.
That's it for the podcast for this week, but we'll be back next week with more great old-time radio. And once again, a reminder that you should check out the Radio Theater Channel, www.oldtimeradiolisten.com. Till next week, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.